Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Today on the TMZ Podcast.
Welcome to the TMZ Podcast. Derek and Jason here.
Happy New Year.
Same to you. Same to you. What are we talking about today?
So a couple things. First, we are going to get into the arrest made in the gruesome quadruple murders of the Idaho college students. But we'd be remiss if we didn't start the year talking about some really sad news, which is during the last, as we've been away for the last week.
Sure.
For the last week, we've had some deaths of incredibly famous, notable people. Some of them a bit older crowd. It's nobody shocking, I guess, but nevertheless, huge people.
Huge names. I actually don't remember an end of year this sort of tragic 2016. Since 2016.
Right. That was
since 2016 when we had Carrie Fisher and her mother, Debbie Reynolds, within a day of one another.
We had Alan Thicke.
There were a few. Prince towards the end of the year.
Yes, that was big.
It was a very big year, but nevertheless, these are some very, very notable deaths. Pele, soccer legend, the king of soccer. I mean, his name was just synonymous with greatness, sort of like a Wayne Gretzky or a Bob Marley, sort of singular figure in their field. Pele passed away after a battle with cancer. He was in the hospital for a number of days and then just passed away.
Real quick, before Pele, soccer was a four-letter word in the United States. You were not allowed to play soccer. When I was a little kid, Pele was just coming onto the scene. He became a titan as I was still a little kid.
When you were a kid, he played for the Cosmos
he
in
played
New York.
For the New York Cosmos. But he was old and past his prime. But nevertheless, he launched soccer in the United States, and I cannot overstate that enough. What a sport. It was not allowed to be. I knew nobody who played soccer when I was a little kid. Now, of course, it's an enormous growing sport, especially youth soccer is. All thanks
and
to
his name spanned generations. When I was a kid, he was already sort of retired, but you would still hear in the schoolyard, like, who do you think you are, Pele?
Yep.
So one of those names that you just like sort of immediately associate with a single sport. And you know, this is a big death in the soccer
world.
The fact
that
we're the World Cup
preempting the deaths or leading with Pele over Barbara Walters, Pope Benedict. I mean, these are huge people. Shows how important Pele was. Barbara Walters. Maybe no more important female journalists in American history?
I think that's right. I was racking my brain. You've got sort of
Diane Sawyer,
Katie Couric, journalists like that. But Barbara Walters was an absolute trailblazer. I've read a lot of pieces about why she was so big and significant, because each generation she had something massive. She would do those interviews with huge dignitaries, huge political leaders, and she was fearless. She would ask them questions that made them uncomfortable, everyone from Fidel Castro to Marlon Brando. And they became these iconic moments, sort of like a Larry King type interviewer. 2020, when I was growing up with Hugh Downs, and then, of course, what was her swan song?
I don't know if her swan song.
Well, I guess, now it's like 30 years old, but The View.
She had The View. She also, for me, when I was younger, it was the post-Oscar interview show. I guess
That's
it was pre-Oscar on the East Coast. It was post-Oscar where I grew up on the West Coast. Interview show where she would get the biggest movie makers of the year, the people nominated for the big awards, and have them on interview style.
And they all looked Vaseline-y and gauzy in those interviews.
She had a really embarrassing moment where she asked somebody, I don't remember who it was, if you were a tree, what tree would you be? And it was sort of widely mocked. But nevertheless, huge pioneer. Pope Benedict, she was 94, I believe, second oldest person to die this week that's famous. Pope Benedict, the first man in 600 years to abdicate the papacy.
Yes, it is wild. And he lived in the Vatican with him in sort of the back house with the current Pope.
Part of the retirement plan.
And, you know, they were polar opposites, right? In the beginning, when he stepped down for old age and health issues, Pope Benedict sort of went into that back house and everyone thought, oh, now we're going to have a liberal Pope in charge. What's
Pope
actually
Francis,
happened,
yeah.
Pope Francis, of course, who has sort of more progressive views in general. Recently, though, he's cited Pope Benedict's views and sort of retrenched into conservative.
He's tacked
to the right. So Pope Benedict, on his deathbed, got to see the papacy restored to the sort of conservative values that he celebrated while he was in charge.
I do want to talk about Idaho. We have a couple other deaths you wanted to mention.
Really quickly. Anita Pointer. I mean, I listen to the Pointer Sisters endlessly.
Yep.
Jump for Your Love. I'm So Excited. Songs like that. Anita Pointer passed away after after a long illness. She was one of the Pointer Sisters, one of the very important Pointer Sisters. Gangsta Boo from 3-6 Mafia, huge death. Mm-hmm. Hard Out Here for a Pimp was a huge Hustle and Flow. Yep. That was a very big moment in pop culture. And Jeremiah Green from Modest Mouse, the drummer from Modest Mouse, also passed away from cancer quite young, in his 40s.
Yeah, so running the gamut of fame, of age, of celebrity, but, you know, tragic week. These things seem to happen towards the end of the year.
They
Maybe
do.
There's some
they
psychology there. We hear sort of anecdotally about how end of the year, beginning of the year kind of stuff can lead to people letting go or whatever it might be.
If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of the hunt. But are you getting the thrill of the best deals? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Macy's, Adidas, and Walmart, and even stack sales on top of cash back. It's easy to use, and you get your cash back through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. So download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten. Rakuten.
Who knows?
Despite the enormity of these deaths, the story that dominated the holidays was the Idaho murders, and now they have an arrest. Tell us about it, Jason.
Yeah, so a guy by the name of Brian Koberger was arrested in Pennsylvania. Authorities allege that he fled the murder scene and drove himself to Pennsylvania. The four young people died: Madison Mogan, Kaylee Gonzalez,
Goncalves.
Is that how that's pronounced?
Yes.
Zana Kernodle and Ethan Chapin, four kids in their early 20s, 20, 21 years old, University of Idaho students. Apparently, Koberger had attended Washington State University. I wasn't aware of this, but they're apparently like 10 miles apart.
Yeah, when you get into the Mountain West like that, there's parts of Idaho that are just on the border of Washington, so the proximity is there.
And so Moscow, Idaho, where the University of Idaho is, and Washington State are just a few miles apart across the Washington-Idaho border.
He was seeking a graduate degree in criminology, which people have fixated on. Brian Koberger he's been painted as, a lot of people, stories have been coming out of talking to his friends and sort of trying to get a sense of who could have possibly committed a quadruple homicide in the dark of night while people were sleeping. And he's only been arrested and charged with these four murders. But the picture that is being painted is someone who is sort of eccentric at best and sort of colorfully sort of strange in other ways.
So he actually had a classmate who gave an interview. I wish I had the publication he gave it to, but I don't. And the classmate said this of him, of Koberger. He said, he had to make absolutely sure you knew he was smart. He had this intellectual capacity. He said Koberger's behavior changed rapidly, especially in the days before the killings. Police heard that. They also, he is only charged, and it's important.
It is very important.
We've seen many, many times where people, all the evidence in the world seems to point to somebody. It turns out that cops were wrong, prosecutors were wrong. It happens. Nevertheless, cops do say that Koberger's DNA was found at the crime scene.
That's going to be a huge issue, right? Because this is a kid who was at a neighboring university, doesn't seem to have a direct link in terms of friendship to any of these people. So the presence of his DNA in that home is going to be a big hurdle for his legal team to sort of overcome if there was no pre-existing relationship. If it's a friend or a boyfriend, their DNA can be on the scene and there's nothing inherently
suspicious
about
that.
You've
got to have a plausible reason. Your DNA is there for a reason.
That's right.
Why is that? What is that reason? What is that justification? Or do you not buy the DNA evidence? Cops say he's the only suspect. They say that the students can now relax.
Yeah.
The suspect has been caught. Boy, I hope they're right because they are giving an absolute assurance that they have the right guy here.
For his part, his lawyer has spoken up. We haven't heard directly from Brian Koberger, but his lawyer has said, look, we're not going to waive extradition. I can explain everything that happened here because, as Jason pointed it out, you've got a kid who was arrested in Pennsylvania for a murder in Ohio. It looks like he fled.
Idaho.
He says, for a murder in Idaho, four murders in Idaho. He says, it was December 18th. I drove cross country with my father in mid-December for the holidays, which is a perfectly reasonable time to drive cross country. This is not necessarily him fleeing the scene.
Indicia of some sort of guilty conscience that he was trying to flee the scene.
That's
right. This is just a pre-planned trip that we had.
That's how he is going to paint it. He was with his father. Remember, the murders happened in mid-November. So an entire month and some change had transpired, had passed before he drove to Pennsylvania where he was ultimately apprehended. He's also waiving extradition. The reports are out there that his lawyer says, look, he thinks he's going to be exonerated of these crimes. He hasn't expressly, sort of said, I didn't commit them, but he doesn't believe that he's going to be convicted. So we'll have to see how this develops. I don't want to jump to these conclusions based on a single arrest for the reasons Jason pointed out. I mean, there's a lot that has to happen before you see this man sort of convicted of these crimes.
So there's a hearing that's going to happen on Tuesday. Today's a holiday for most courts. There's a hearing on Tuesday. Presumably, we'll get more light shined on exactly what the charges are. We know it's from first degree murder. We know that the prosecutors have said they're charging him with first degree murder. Yes. So they don't believe at this point it was a heat of passion killing or something that happened. Instead, they're saying that he set out with malice aforethought, and premeditation to kill these four people. And he committed. That's the charge with those.
And remember, the murder weapon here was identified as this hunting knife.
Yes.
So the idea that his DNA there is quite probable to me. If they found DNA, you're going to find the DNA of the killer, because even if you're able to slay one or two people while they're sleeping in a very sort of clean fashion, there's much of a struggle. The other two are probably going to wake up to screams. There were reports that there was a scream in the house that the neighbors sort of disregarded as that's a party house, there's often some screams. But that could have awoken other people in the house. It's not likely you're able to commit four homicides by yourself without some form of struggle from some people in the house who were murdered. And so in a struggle, you're going to have defensive wounds, you're going to have scrapes, you're going to have the knife blade hitting your own hand, you're going to leave some DNA. That's why I think what it will be critical to this case is whether or not Brian Koberg had any connection with any of these four people, which we haven't heard of, and why his DNA is there if that's what they found.
If that's what they found, I mean, we're taking prosecutor's word right now. Sure. They have the DNA and they've matched it to his. DNA technology has come a long way since O.J. Simpson, right, where you can really challenge the underlying basis. Now, if your DNA is found somewhere, it's found somewhere. So he's going to, obviously, he's going to have to justify his DNA. And who knows what he's going to say.
I want to talk a little bit about the character evidence that's being mounted here. Whenever you see an arrest of this magnitude that the media is entirely focused on, I mean, this has crossed every sort of media outlet. You're just seeing people trying to find stories, trying to learn more about Brian Koberger. A lot of the stories that are coming out are that he was a hardcore vegan, that he studied criminology. And people are seizing on these things as indicative of his guilt. It's a sort of natural tendency. Right. We finally have an arrest. This was a huge mystery for a month and a half.
Right.
It exposed sort of the Idaho cops as maybe bumbling in a murder investigation and so forth. What do you make of this, though? I read these things and I say, okay, he was a hardcore vegan. That's a long road to murder. Yeah. Okay, he studied criminology. Well, a lot of people do. Was he plotting how to get away with murder? Everyone's mind runs rampant.
Well, there's a reason we have rules of evidence, right? There's a reason that courts have to, that in order to introduce evidence to a jury, it's got to meet a sufficient level of relevance that it overcomes any sort of prejudicial impact that it might have, right?
Yes.
And courts are serious about the rules of evidence. The reason is because you present to a carnivorous jury the fact that he was a vegan and they might just not like vegans.
Yeah,
Hitler was
a vegan. Oh, he probably murdered people. It's nonsense.
Was Hitler a vegan?
Hitler was famously a vegetarian. So they ever seen that list where they list two columns of characteristics, vegan, all these positive things, and then all these philanderer and negative things, and one is FDR and one is Hitler.
Yeah,
big internet. Right. Oh, my. Good people, bad people.
So the fact that he's a vegan is obviously irrelevant to determination of whether he killed these four people or would be more likely to do it. And so that's the kind of thing that would be excluded as evidence. But nevertheless, to your point, in the court of public opinion and the court of social media, these kinds of things have traction. Now, if he was obviously exonerated of this, then people would say, see, a vegan could never do something like this.
So they draw the wrong conclusion either way.
Right. Yes. It's gonna be used to confirm whatever biases we have in one direction or another. The ultimate sanction, if Brian Koberger is convicted of first-degree murder, Idaho does, in fact, have the death penalty.
Yes.
Prosecutors have an option whether to seek it or not, and typically it's bifurcated. Trials will be, so they'll have a determination of guilt or innocence. And once, if a guilty verdict comes down, you will then have a determination of whether or not to impose the death penalty. You do that because you don't want a jury to have the ultimate sanction weigh upon their determination of guilt or innocence.
That's right. Primarily, the jury is there to determine whether the crimes were committed, and the sentencing phase is left to the judge. What sentence should I impose after this, sort of conviction? I have very little doubt that they will seek the death penalty. It's a quadruple homicide, one of the worst, most grisly crimes you've seen in Idaho. Dead of night, apparently no connection, seems sort of random, serial killer-esque. I have no doubt that the prosecutors will probably seek the death penalty. Whether they actually get it and what sort of mitigating circumstances are presented on Brian Koberger's behalf, that remains to be seen. Because to get the death penalty is very different than seeking the death penalty, and they'll look at aggravating circumstances and mitigating circumstances. Right. Unless you have certainly a gruesome crime,
right?
With a knife, horrendous, dark of night. But what we haven't heard is anything from him, and that can really tip the scales towards life imprisonment if enough is presented about his traumatic childhood and things of that nature.
The last beat I want to hit on this is early on in this investigation, the Moscow police took a lot of heat because there were feelings that they hadn't done very much to secure the scene, to investigate the crime, and certainly it took a long time to make an arrest, given how awful the crimes were. Are they vindicated now? I mean, assuming they have the right guy, is there a sense of vindication? They claimed, just to finish this up, they said that, look, we had to keep a lot silent. We had to keep a lot from the public because we didn't want to tip off the murderer that we were on his heels.
I felt for them the entire time. I'll be honest with you. It felt like it was a very active investigation, but it was a mystery. Yeah. And cops are people. And to conduct a full investigation where you're able to run down leads while the media and everyone is sort of coming up with theories on TikTok is a difficult task. I mean,
they're a tiny police department with a tiny budget. This is not CSI. They don't have the technology that other people have. They invited the FBI in, who assisted in the investigation, as they should rightly do, because the FBI has the access to resources that this small police department doesn't have. I also thought it was terribly unfair.
I did.
It was also rushes to judgment. We didn't know what the hell we were talking about out here in sort of Chatterville.
Yeah.
And we're just going after these folks without a knowledge of the facts. And they came out and said, look, we can't disclose everything. We're trying to track a suspect across an entire country. We know they've had an idea who this guy was
for a
long time. It takes time to bring him to justice and not screw this thing up.
It really does. And one of the things I wanted to seize on is there was so much interest in the car that was driven. There was a white Hyundai. And remember, they found a burned out white Hyundai in the middle of the country somewhere. I think it was Arizona or Nevada. And everyone started harassing the person who owned that vehicle. Had nothing to do with Brian Koberger. A Hyundai is a very, very common vehicle. And that's why the police wanted to conduct their investigation without sort of the onslaught of the press and the theories on TikTok. Now, you're not able, we have a free press and they're entitled to sort of search for answers in their, you know, on their own time and do these things. But I actually think it's a vindication of the police department. I think they did a great job, and we'll see where it leads.
Social media really does suck sometimes.
It really does.
Real quick, before we let everybody go, tonight on Fox at 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 Central, TMZ has a fantastic special, Lamar Odom, Sex Lies and the Kardashians. Incredibly revelatory. We sat down with
Lamar
for a long, long time. We talked about everything from the brothel to his relationship with the Kardashian family to Tristan Thompson.
You'll be shocked at the level of candor you get from Lamar Odom. I mean, I think of basketball players as quite guarded. Professional athletes usually sort of reserved and give stock answers to things.
Yeah.
Not the case with this documentary. Yeah. Lamar just opens up about his entire Kardashian saga, Tristan, as you said. So it really is must-see television.
Most interesting thing he said, I watched the special over the weekend. I had an advanced copy because, you know, I work here.
Yeah.
And it was...
perks of the job.
Perks of the job. And he said that he was not... he did not take any drugs at the brothel that night he was saved.
Unbelievable, right? I mean, the stories that were swirling at that time, for him to say that was jaw-dropping.
Yeah. All right, everybody, thanks very much. We'll see you again tomorrow.
See you next time.